Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the TBH Sports Podcast. After a brief hiatus, mostly due to summer baseball, certainly makes things difficult to try to get on here for these pods, and very similar for my guest today, Ethan Jordan, who, of course, is calling games out for the Grand Junction Rockies. Ethan, your summer ball team here doing a little bit better than mine. It looks like things have been pretty exciting for you out there in Grand Junction. Saw even a home run derby format here for extra innings out there.
Yeah, we finally had one at a game I was calling the other day, and it was a lot of fun. The monster bat flip from our guy who won the derby for us.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. And again, I mean, just a lot of fun. Something you don't typically see. The Cape League has actually completely canceled extra innings this summer, which is just a shame. But on the bright side, rainout games not being made off are made up. So off days remain off days. Nothing too much to complain about, but a lot to talk about here on the show. And Ethan, it's been a couple of weeks. I think I said 3 or 4 weeks ago that we would be back with another episode very soon. That ended up being a lie. A lot going on here, as I'm sure it was with you, getting the Summer League off the ground, but ready to come back here and talk about some Formula One. And while we were away, it seems the narrative across F1 may have shifted, especially regarding the battle at the top. I'm going to open the show here with an interesting question that I never thought I would be asking you here, Ethan. Is Red Bull and Max Verstappen, are they too good for Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton to put up a good fight? Because recently we haven't really been seeing the battles we got early in the season. It has just been pure, uncut Red Bull dominance these last 3 or 4 races.
I am going to give you an answer that I never thought I would say, but Mercedes has virtually no shot at the Constructors' Championship. Red Bull appears to be the dominant team. I mean, it's like you said, it's one thing if, you know, Max Verstappen is winning these races against Lewis Hamilton. It's another thing if Lewis Hamilton isn't even getting on the podium sometimes. And I don't know what's up with Mercedes. Maybe these new regulations are getting to them a little sooner than we thought, but they're not just losing, they're getting their asses kicked right now.
Yeah, it has been an absolute wash at this point. If you take a look across the constructors' standings, this is really kind of the shocking one, because I think you and I were both playing around with the idea preseason that, you know, maybe Max Verstappen takes the drivers' championship away, but the constructors' championship is Mercedes to lose. Well, now it's looking like Mercedes has some work to do. 286 points right now for Red Bull, 242 points for Mercedes. The next closest is McLaren, of course, with 141, but if you look at the driver's championship, this is where the shakeup has really started to come in. Max Verstappen with a dominant lead out in first, 182 points for him, ahead of 150 points for Lewis Hamilton, and then 104 for Sergio Perez, who is not ahead of Valtteri Bottas in fourth. He's ahead of Valtteri Bottas in fifth. Yes, that's right. Valtteri Bottas, 92 points, partially bad luck. We'll talk about him in a bit, but he is trailing even Lando Norris, who currently has 101 points. I mean, this is just not what we were expecting. And Ethan, you know, again, preseason, if either one of us had said or tried to make the take that Red Bull were the favorites, I think we both would have laughed the other off the show. But at this point, that's looking not only like a fact, but something that I don't think is going to let up any point through the season. I mean, you see the same kind of split that we saw between Lewis Hamilton to Max Verstappen in 2019 and in 2020. You're starting to see that 10-15-20 second split between the two in reverse now, and I just don't know that Mercedes can keep up.
No, the Red Bull has the better car right now. They've also had better luck, so there's two things that'll pretty much automatically put you ahead. And yeah, it's interesting, because you looked at the top, you said, okay, Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, they're gonna have a go at each other. Sergio Perez and Valtteri Bottas, well, let's hope they can have a go at each other. And that's the key, really. If we think back to the beginning of the season, it wasn't, oh, well, these two, they're going to have a go at each other. It was, oh, I hope that Max Verstappen can have a go at Lewis Hamilton in some races this year. It wasn't a guarantee that that was even going to happen. And now all of a sudden, here he is cooking Lewis. I think that Mercedes is a smart enough team and Lewis Hamilton is a good enough driver that they can pull themselves back into contention in terms of at least competing in races before this season is over. I don't think they can pull themselves back into contention in the Constructors' Championship. I don't think it's possible. We're not quite to the halfway point of the year, but already I think Red Bull has stretched the lead that unless Mercedes dramatically improves and becomes dominant Mercedes a la, you know, every year since in recent memory, right? If they can't become that somehow, which I don't think they will, they have no chance at the Constructors' Championship. However, I think we'll see them get a little more competitive in races sometime soon, I hope.
Yeah, and again, if you remember, I think the nature of these victories for Red Bull also tells you something. Because yes, it was a very good start to the season for this Mercedes team. Lewis Hamilton actually won, if you'll remember, 3 of the first 4 races, but Verstappen was right on his heels, whereas in a lot of these victories for Max Verstappen, or in the case where both of them DNF'd, the win for Sergio Perez, nobody particularly close. This has been kind of a dominant run here for Red Bull, and again, I don't know. I agree with you. I think that Mercedes is going to make adjustments. I think they'll be more competitive, but I don't know that they're going to be able to figure that out fast enough to really make a push for the title this year, which I think is great for Formula One. I think the dynasties are certainly a good thing, but at the dominant level that Mercedes was running at, somebody needed to step up and take him down. I was just expecting more of kind of a fight as opposed to kind of the whimper that it seems like Mercedes is going out with here. So, you know, we'll see. Anything can happen. Silverstone is up next. We'll be in Great Britain on July 16th, the race on July 18th, and as you mentioned, a lot of racing left to go, but right now this championship really does feel like it's both Max Verstappen in the driver's standings and Red Bull in the constructor's standings to lose. A couple of other things that are going on right now across F1 that are keeping this season very interesting. I mentioned that Lando Norris has graduated. We've talked about this a little bit on the show before. He's graduated from last lap Lando to one of the most consistent drivers on the grid. He is the only driver on the grid to score points in each of his last, I believe, 10 races after Lewis Hamilton had his first DNF in what feels like forever. But he's not the one from Mercedes, he's not the one from McLaren that I want to talk about for just a moment. We've brought this up before. I kind of thought this would autocorrect itself. It has not. And I think it's time to call a spade a spade. Daniel Ricciardo has been absolutely horrendous. I figured maybe it was just taking him time to get used to that car, but at this point, he is being outperformed so aggressively by Lando Norris. So again, keep in mind, 101 championship points for Norris this year, 40 for Daniel Ricciardo, who just consistently cannot. He's struggling to put that McLaren on the top 10 for qualifying, Ethan.
I went on a mini rant about Mr. Ricciardo, I believe on the last podcast we did, and it hasn't changed. This is terrible, man. This is unacceptable from Daniel Ricciardo. There's two reasons why. One, Daniel Ricciardo in the past has said, or at least it has been insinuated, that he has the talent to compete for a world championship if he is in the right car. Okay. Point number two is his teammate has 3 podiums this year,
mm-hmm.
And he's what, 21 years old? No, is he 21 yet?
He is barely 21. I believe that it was a running joke I heard because he could finally drink the champagne after his podium.
Okay, so his 21-year-old teammate is blowing him off the grid, and this dude was supposed to compete for a world championship? Now, I'm not saying that that was all false about Daniel Ricciardo. I think it's actually the opposite. I think he does have the talent to not compete for a world championship. That was ridiculous. But to be a great Formula One driver. And man, he's been terrible. This is like Alex Albon, I think, on steroids. This is miserable, man. Like, at least Albon came up, and, you know, Gasly even. At least they came up and it's like, oh, okay, this doesn't work out. This is a guy who was at Red Bull. It's like, dude, you left Red Bull, went to Renault. That was not good because their car was terrible. Drove the crap out of the car. I'll give him that. Then you go to McLaren and you put up this? Come on, man. I don't know what's going on with Daniel Ricciardo. I don't know something on. I really couldn't tell you because it's actually been fairly, you know, mum about what is going on at McLaren with Danny Rick. But man, I don't know. I said last time something has to change, and it hasn't. Let me pose this question to you, Tyler.
Sure.
Is Daniel Ricciardo's history and his talent, I say with air quotes, which I think there is some there. I only half with air quotes. Are those two things enough to keep him in a McLaren seat? I think he'll be there next year. Don't get me wrong. But if he does this garbage next year, is that enough to keep him around? Or is McLaren even at this point looking for maybe somebody else?
I think that, honestly, I'm starting to kind of ask myself the same question, because as you mentioned, I think that that second year performance at Renault, that really gave me a lot of confidence in Daniel Ricciardo's ability to bounce back and have a big season at McLaren. I think the thing that concerns me even more than the performances has been kind of his lackadaisical attitude. I don't know if you really watch kind of the pre and post race and post qualifying interviews that they do. He just never seems bothered by the fact that he is arguably the most underperforming driver on the grid for the machinery that he has. And that is the thing that concerns me. Now, granted, if you give him some time to settle in, maybe he does the same thing that he did at Renault, and I think that he would stay at a place like McLaren. But I'm with you. If these performances continue, I think that McLaren is trending in a direction where they're going to be competing for something a little bit bigger than they are right now. And I don't know that they can do that with Ricciardo if he continues to decline like this. But yeah, I don't know. I also think, and I wanted to talk about this a little bit later in the show here, but I think we're going to see some serious shakeups to the driver lineups. I think Red Bull is pretty much set for this foreseeable future, but I think everybody else, we could see some drastic changes. And when you start throwing some names out there like Valtteri Bottas and some of these other guys, maybe even up here, Gasly, that starts to get a lot more intriguing if you're talking about the third best team on the grid having a second seat that right now is just not competitive compared to their 21-year-old wonder kid.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one thing if, you know, McLaren was hanging around near the top, but they had an aging other driver, you know. I'm not going to say Kimi Räikkönen, but somebody like that, or like, I don't know, even Sebastian Vettel, who's kind of this aging, you know, was great at one time, but isn't at that level where we're still competing because he's still a good driver. That's great. Fine. Carry the load with Daniel Ricciardo. But McLaren is on the upswing. And at some point, Lando Norris is going to enter his prime. He is going to be peaking. And at that time, you need to have a secondary driver that is not going to finish in P8 consistently. That's bad. You can't do that if McLaren really wants to once again compete with the big boys. You just can't do that. And so I think they've got time. That's the good news for them. That's the good news with Lando Norris being 21. But at some point, you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, is this really what we want moving forward? And you need to put that plan into motion sooner than, oh, well, Daniel Ricciardo was bad again this year. You need to have those ideas before then, and I think they already do. I'm sure there's a lot of people who know a lot more about F1 and drivers and things like that than we do. I'm sure they've already said behind closed doors, well, we need to have a plan B here because plan A is finishing in P8, and that's not good.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And again, I think that, you know, the one thing I really wanted to talk about, kind of the thing I wanted to base this episode around, because again, we've had the races, they've been kind of self-explanatory. Also, they're far enough in the past that we're not going to go back and revisit them. But I think that what we've seen so far this year really does start to pose some interesting questions. And let me pose one specifically to you here. We'll kind of circle back a little bit on the Daniel Ricciardo thing, but in my opinion, and call me crazy, I think that there are very few seats that are secure for the foreseeable future. And when I say the foreseeable future, I'm talking probably between 3 to 4 years in the future. I think Verstappen and obviously Sergio Perez are probably set at Red Bull. I think Lewis Hamilton is set at Mercedes. I think Ferrari is happy with both of their drivers, and Lando Norris is set at McLaren, talking about those top four teams. But I do not necessarily think that Daniel Ricciardo's seat is safe, and call me crazy, Ethan. I know this is a take that would have been very hot at the beginning of the season. Perhaps it's a little less hot now, but let me ask you this. Do you feel like Valtteri Bottas' seat is safe? Because to me, I'm actually leaning towards Valtteri being gone next year. The way George Russell is driving the hell out of that Williams, I mean, my man was in the top 10. He got to Q3 in a Williams. A Williams that is still not performing. A Williams that still has not scored a single championship point this year. I mean, that's absolutely astounding. Give that man a real car. I think Mercedes may have a legitimate contender on their hands again a year from now.
Yeah, I think the problem is not instantly solved for Mercedes by switching out Russell for Bottas. I'll say that first. However, there was already talk last year of George Russell. Well, Valtteri Bottas, like, yeah, no one was dumb enough to think it would happen this year, but there was the rumbling started, like, oh, well, no. Do we want, is this, yeah, Valtteri Bottas, I don't know. George Russell, you know, he was a wheel bump away from maybe winning a race. Okay. So that has already started. It's not like it was just this year all of a sudden. Valtteri Bottas kind of isn't performing at the level Mercedes probably wants him to. And now this talk starts. No, it's a year old at this point. And I think this is just the continued evolution is going to bring about ascension of George Russell. Even now, Valtteri finished on a podium for what seems like the first time in a while. Well, at least in P2. I think he finished P3 a couple weeks ago. But he felt like he had finally had a good drive, a clean drive in this last race, which I think was a breath of fresh air for him. I don't think that it is set yet that Valtteri Bottas is out at Mercedes next year. But I think it's a real possibility, and I think if Toto Wolff is smart, he has had or will be having soon with Valtteri Bottas that conversation of, hey, man, we need to see something out of you because we got a guy in the wings, and see if that can kind of get Valtteri into another gear and improve his competition this year. Because remember, we talked about this earlier. The dude has just been sitting behind guys. Like, there hasn't been any aggressiveness out of him. And that's what I think maybe that can unlock. Remember, we've still got over a half a season left. So I think there is time for Valtteri Bottas to save his seat. So to sum everything up really about Valtteri Bottas, I think he has half a season left to either A, save his seat at Mercedes. And I think that depends less on Valtteri Bottas and more on Toto Wolff and what he and the Mercedes team want to do. Or B, if he wants to, who knows if he even would want to take another seat, but save himself a seat at another team. He needs to continue to perform like he did the last couple races. And I think he will at least have the option of having a seat in Formula One next year, even if George Russell takes over at Mercedes.
Yeah, I think Valtteri Bottas is kind of caught between this rock and a hard place. You talked about, you know, one thing that kind of, it was already there, the conversation about George Russell, and it now takes on a new evolution here in 2021. I think another thing that started to do that is kind of his unwillingness to be a team player in all of this for Mercedes. If you go back to, obviously Netflix dramatizes things a little bit, but again, you know, the little slingshot, the little wind tunnel he gave Max Verstappen to try to end up where he wanted to end up on the grid, and then already this season we've seen him kind of, you know, not willing necessarily to let Lewis Hamilton pass on a couple of these, but in terms of performance, you're still talking about a guy that's been very solid, and I agree with your point. There's no guarantee that having George Russell there makes things any better. You're also talking about a Valtteri Bottas that, let's give him his due here. Through 9 races, he's been on the podium very quietly here 5 different times, typically in third, once here in second, but he's still finding the steps, and that's very important for a team that's trying to compete for a world championship. So, you know, again, I don't know that he would want to leave, because I don't know that there's a better seat for him in Formula One. If he's not with one of these top two teams, you know, if he can't secure a spot at, say, McLaren, obviously he's not going to get into Ferrari. I don't really see Valtteri Bottas willingly making a move to a team like Aston Martin or a team like Renault. I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, it feels like the best option for him is going to be to stay at Mercedes, but depending on what happens this season, that may not be an option that he's really given. And that's kind of where I think this becomes a little more intriguing.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing you have to look at is, does Valtteri Bottas want to stay in F1 if he's not at Mercedes? He doesn't have to. He's got a bunch of constructors championships under his belt. He's done his thing. He's never going to win a world championship, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And so what is left for him in F1 other than if he just, you know, loves the sport, wants to continue to compete. I think if that is the case for him, I think Alpine, however you want to say it, I think that could be a great fit for him, but that's kind of up to him. I mean, do you want to stay in F1? And even if it's not this year, there is going to come a time when George Russell, unless something weird happens, is going to be brought into Mercedes. Guess what? They're not going to take Lewis Hamilton out to put George Russell in unless Hamilton retires. But who knows, Lewis Hamilton could be 80 and still driving an F1. He's that crazy in a good way. But it's not going to be Lewis Hamilton who gets taken out. So some point down the line, Valtteri Bottas is going to have to decide, do I walk away right away into the sunset, or do I pull a Kimi Raikkonen and go on some other team? I think he can be on a better team than Alpha happens in the next few seasons. But yeah, it all comes down to what he wants to do, really.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. So we've talked a little bit about the top three teams. There is one other team that, you know, you and I kind of thought a couple races in might be in that conversation. And then things kind of just did not go well for them. The last couple weeks have been rough for Ferrari. I still think this is a team that they have the capability to kind of figure it out. But we're starting to kind of see that McLaren island that you and I kind of looked at preseason. More so you than me. I will give you full marks for that. McLaren island is becoming a very real thing as they kind of sit all alone. Ferrari not challenging them for third, but they are also not challenging Mercedes or Red Bull for second and first.
Yeah, I think that gap is real, and it's not going away this season. In fact, it will probably get larger as the season continues on. But I think Ferrari has an opportunity to put themselves on their own little island if they can be a bit more consistent. I think they are clearly the fourth best team on the grid. I know Sebastian Vettel got that podium, that second place podium. It'll take a little while to kind of edge that off. But if Ferrari can be consistent, I think they are obviously the fourth best team on the grid.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. They have already kind of created that separation from the rest of the pack. They have 122 championship points. The next closest team is AlphaTauri with 48. But they're actually a little bit closer to McLaren than I thought. McLaren currently is only 19 points ahead. And I think, again, I wouldn't even count out Ferrari's opportunity to potentially catch up unless Daniel Ricciardo can remember how to drive a Formula One car. And I hate that everything kind of comes back to Danny Ric, but in terms of things being interesting down the stretch, that might be the case, because I think we've seen some pretty good consistency this year for what the car has been able to do out of both Carlos Sainz and, of course, Charles Leclerc. But man, Daniel Ricciardo really is kind of the one thing lugging everyone else behind and kind of keeping McLaren within striking distance here for Ferrari. So, you know.
Yeah, you said it. And I mean, just to finish the point, I think, yes, I agree with you. If Daniel Ric just continues to drive like this, shoot, I think they will catch it. But I think taking away points in that aside, I think McLaren clearly has the third best car and Ferrari has the fourth.
Yep.
Excluding whatever the heck is going on with Daniel Ricciardo.
I completely agree. Really only one other driver specifically that I wanted to talk about, although I did think it was worth mentioning here, the guy behind him. Let me go ahead and get into Pierre Gasly first. Again, don't want to spend too much time on Gasly. He's kind of doing what he does every year. He's driving the hell out of that AlphaTauri. He is completely putting it in places where it doesn't belong. Already a podium for the Frenchman this year. And you're also talking about a guy right now that is sitting in P9, 39 championship points. The guy behind him is Sebastian Vettel, but the guy behind him in 11th right now is Fernando Alonso, who has not been great, but he's been, I think, better than expected. I certainly didn't expect him to be better than Ocon in terms of his points total at this point in the season, but I think we can agree that everyone else here in the midfield, from Aston Martin to Alpine and everybody below them, is kind of just a hot mess this season, and really not that interesting to keep an eye on.
Lance Stroll is a snooze fest. Aston Martin, for the most part, I don't care. I mean, Sebastian Vettel occasionally kind of sort of doing things is interesting because of his history, but I don't care about Lance Stroll this year at all. Esteban Ocon and Alpine, including, and yes, I'll say it, Fernando Alonso has been better than I thought. He's been sneaky good this year. I still give that seat to someone else, please. I don't need more Fernando Alonso in my life. But to his credit, he has been better. I think Alpine's been kind of fun this year. I really do. I think Ocon has had some good drives. He has impressed me this year. After last year, I was like, I liked Ocon before, but I'm kind of leaning the other way on him now. But after this season, I've been pleasantly surprised with him. And I don't want to say pleasantly surprised with Alonso, but surprised that he has been better. Alpine is fun. They're not good, don't get me wrong, but they are fun. If they could, develop a real car, that would help a lot too. But I think Gasly is really, really an interesting driver. And you know, he gets talked about a lot because he randomly ends up on podiums in a car that he shouldn't. But in his history with Red Bull, is there a chance that Pierre Gasly, if he continues to drive well, I know that supposedly the AlphaTauri is his sweet spot and all that stuff, but if Daniel Ricciardo is terrible again, I mean, does McLaren have to take at least a cursory glance at Pierre Gasly?
I think they do. I mean, you look at the field right now, I don't know that there's a better option. I mean, unless you're talking about a world in which Valtteri Bottas is available, which I think would be very interesting. If you cut Danny Ric, who is better that you pick up? Because you're not taking anyone away from Red Bull, McLaren, or yeah, you're not taking anyone away from Red Bull. You're not taking anyone away from McLaren or Ferrari. I mean, if you're asking me right now who I would rather have, the top of the list, clearly and pretty much all by himself, other than George Russell, which again, I don't know if that's an option or not, it's got to be Pierre Gasly. So yeah, I think that you really do have to take a look. Again, the question just becomes how committed are, you know, this, or is this McLaren team to what has unfortunately become a bit of a project here in Daniel Ricciardo when they thought they were getting a veteran potential number one driver?
Well, I don't think the plan was ever to have Daniel Ricciardo as the number one driver, which maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know. But that's where I think Gasly fits so well at McLaren. Two reasons. One, I think there was too much pressure at Red Bull. You're expected to be competing with Max Verstappen, like, big time. You should be competing for a world championship, I think, is how it was kind of presented to him. I think that was too much. And I think being on a McLaren team where he is, again, clearly the number two driver, and a team that's on the come up. It's not a team that has arrived, but it's a team that's, you know, hey, let's go out and try and compete against these teams. We're not expected to compete against them. Let's try and do it. And I think that lack of pressure, not that there's no pressure there, but much less than to get put behind Max Verstappen in the same car as he is, and he's out there now this year cooking Lewis Hamilton, and you're like, oh, geez, I mean, how do I compete with that? Well, you don't have to. And I think Gasly would be a wonderful fit. And McLaren, I don't know if they do that, but I think it'd be good for him. I mean, at some point, he needs a second chance in a real car. I mean, he's just been too good.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think there are even a few more pieces to that. I think, first of all, I think the attitude driving-wise for McLaren as a team is the same as the attitude driving-wise for Pierre Gasly as an individual. And that's, we have something that is good, let's make it great without necessarily making the vehicle better. I think that you've seen McLaren at times this year. Obviously, Lando Norris has put things on podiums that maybe shouldn't have been there before, similar to what Gasly has done. But I think the other big piece in all of this, if you swap out for Danny Ric, is now you're getting two young drivers who kind of came through the junior programs together, who are friends. And you're basically going to, if you can put those two guys in a position to succeed, secure your future. I mean, if you have two guys that are that young, and again, Pierre Gasly is a little bit older, obviously, than Lando Norris, but if you got two guys at that age, you're set, especially if the team starts competing. If we're talking about these new FIA regulations coming down that are evening things out, and you do have a legitimate four-way battle for first, which, by the way, I think you, me, and everyone else would absolutely love, I think that could be intriguing. But again, I think a lot of that depends on whether Ricciardo figures it out or not, which right now it's leaning towards no. But yeah, I think that would be a really intriguing option here. And I think that, you know, for McLaren, that might be something very solid. But again, I still think that Ricciardo will figure it out. I don't know if it takes him long enough that they cut him first, is kind of my question.
I mean, it's an example you can use in any sport, but let's take the example of baseball. You've got this batter you gave a ton of money to, and he's batting like .210 about halfway through the season. And well, even though there may be a guy in the wings behind him who is potentially better, he got a big contract, he's the big name, he's going to continue to play. I think that's the case for Daniel Ricciardo this year and next year. But after that, at some point, you got to take a look and do something different.
Yep, I completely agree. So let's go ahead and wrap things up here. Again, I don't want to spend much time or any time really talking about anyone else unless you want to talk about them. I just want to say really quickly, I'm glad Nikita Mazepin still has zero world championship points, and Nicholas Latifi is still, fun fact, very bad at driving Formula One cars. Please get this man off of my television every single week. What is going on? Why is Nicholas Latifi still here?
There's new management at Williams. We can only hope that Nicholas Latifi, this is his final year, please do this. There are two drivers I want to mention quickly.
Okay.
Mick Schumacher is good at driving F1 cars. Mm-hmm. I continue to stand by that point. Get this man in a real car sooner rather than later. And two, Yuki Tsunoda is exactly who we thought he is. He is an incredibly dynamic driver who I think is very good, but he is very volatile. And he's continued to show that this year. And I'm a big Yuki guy. I continue to stand. He's a blast. These two guys are fun to watch. And hopefully Yuki hangs around for a bit longer in his F1 career.
Yep, I completely agree. And I think volatile just fits right in at AlphaTauri for a team that, you know, some days they're not anywhere near the top 10. Some days you turn around and you're like, oh, Pierre Gasly's in P4. How did this happen? I love it. It'll be fun to see how things go. Again, the next race is going to be at Silverstone, which is, you know, okay. I'm sure things will not be as exciting as they were last time. But really quickly, one last question for you here on Formula One before we move on, Ethan Jordan. How many more races does Max Verstappen win before somebody other than Max Verstappen wins a race? He is currently riding a 3-race winning streak. What do you got for me here?
My fantasy team depends on this. So this is a question I have been pondering quite a bit. I have not used him as my mega driver yet.
Bold.
And more error than anything else. I didn't use him with the boost. You know, after five weeks in a row of finishing the top 10, you get some extra points. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll just use him at Hungary, which is the last race of the first half, last time I can use him. There's five more races until then. He DNFs the next race, so therefore he will not get to the boost before the first half comes to an end. But I would still like him to finish in first and get those extra points. So I'm just kind of waiting, and I don't know. I might Silverstone kind of is run by Lewis Hamilton, but we'll see. I don't know. It's going to be a car problem, I think, before he gets beat, at least in the first half. Lewis will get him at some point, though. I would be stunned if Max Verstappen does not lose to Lewis Hamilton at least once more this season.
Two very, very quick points to make. You mentioned he DNF'd because Pirelli just did not have their stuff together, and he blew a tire on the main straight. I mega-drivered Max Verstappen that week, so that was very, very unfortunate for me. Two, the only race that Lewis Hamilton has owned more than Silverstone in the course of his career, it's actually the Hungaro Ring. So you may want to rethink that. I'm giving you this information in hopes that you can pass Carson Roberts. But
it doesn't matter. Hungaro Ring doesn't matter. It was going to be, now that he DNF'd, there's no streak, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I need him to win the race. If he wins the race and I mega driver him, and me and Carson at least have a similar week that week, which we will because our teams are almost exactly the same, which is annoying. If that happens, I will be like 10 to 15 points behind him, and that's when things get fun.
All right. Well, we will keep checking in on that. We'll also keep checking in on the Formula One season, but there's also something else going on right now, something arguably a little more important and something that has some teams in it that nobody was really expecting too much before the season began. Of course, I will note we are recording this podcast at about 10 p.m. Eastern time, so this game one of the NBA Finals is currently in progress between the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, to give myself a little bit of credit here, I did predict Phoenix and Brooklyn in the finals, just kind of looking at the field that was left, but I did not think this Milwaukee team was going to get here. We're going to have either a new NBA champ or a team that has not won it since, I believe, the 1970s. And Ethan, I tell you what, I am all here for this. You know I am the parody guy, and we are getting it. The Bucks and the Suns here in the NBA Finals. Again, approaching halftime of Game 1 right now, but before this game began, what were kind of your biggest points to make, your biggest thoughts for the series coming in?
Yeah, I want to give us some credit on our last podcast we did together. And that was a longer time ago than I think I remember. Now that I think about it, that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we both said, I believe we both picked the Suns to go to the finals.
Yep.
And I think I picked the Bucks.
You did. You absolutely did.
I picked the Bucks at the beginning of this playoffs. I picked the Bucks and the Clippers, the all choke. Finals, one of those came true. Once the Suns beat the Lakers, I was like, okay, forget this. We're taking the Suns. They're the real deal. But yeah, we called the Suns. I at least called the Bucks more out of, oh, I predict them at the beginning, so I'm going to go with it. I had no confidence in that pick, really. But here they are. And I still cannot believe the Milwaukee Bucks are in the finals. That is the most, that the Suns, that makes sense to me. That checks out. Even before the season, if you said Suns are making the finals, I'd be like, okay. And actually the Bucks at the beginning of the year, if you said Bucks are in the finals, I'm like, okay. But having seen the first round of this, these playoffs and the second round of these playoffs, I cannot believe the Milwaukee Bucks are in the finals.
Yeah. The Bucks at times have been this well-oiled machine driven by a six-year-old. I mean, the decision-making for this team, and you watch them break it down sometimes on Inside the NBA or on YouTube, it doesn't make any sense, some of the things that they're doing. I know health has been kind of an issue. Giannis has been on and off the court, but man, against the Atlanta Hawks especially, they should have probably swept that series, and Atlanta made it interesting. I did not expect that, so... Yeah, I really have no idea how the Bucks are here either, and I don't know how well things are going to go for them against the Suns. So far through one half of basketball, they look okay here, but again, I think the big thing to watch is, can Giannis stay healthy throughout the course of this, or throughout the course of the series? And I just don't know if he's going to be able to do that.
I think Giannis going out, hot take, I think it was a blessing in disguise for the Bucks, and here's why. Because they were fortunate enough to have Atlanta, who I think they're just simply a more talented team than. Atlanta is on the come up. I get it. Trae Young, they're fun. John Collins, I enjoy Atlanta. But I think the Bucks were clearly the more talented team. I think Giannis going out spaced the court a little bit more for some of their guys, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton finally decided, well, not finally. He actually was quite good in the playoffs in the bubble. But he had a chance to not choke during the playoffs and be the guy, and was quite successful in doing so. Remember the first game that Giannis went out, Chris Middleton dropped like, I don't remember how many, but he led the game in scoring, and that was great. I think, and then the spacing of the floor without Giannis also helps Brooke Lopez, who had a heck of a game and gave us some good memes that did not get enough run. The meme of Brooke Lopez on the bench is terrific. It's funny, but I think it helped them out. Now, that being said, I think they found this other gear without Giannis. Okay, this is what we can do without Giannis. Now what they need to do is get Giannis back and find a way to incorporate him that works with what they were doing against the Hawks. I think they need to find a way to mesh those two things, because if it's just full-blown Giannis, they're not going to win this series. And I don't think they're going to win the series anyway, truth be told. But I think in order to do so, they need to find a way to space the floor a little bit more with Giannis. And frankly, they need one Drew Holiday to go absolutely bonkers. He needs to be the man on defense, which he absolutely is capable of doing. And he has to score the basketball more. They got away with it a little bit against the Hawks. I remember on our podcast, we said Drew Holiday was the key. They got away with him not scoring the basketball as much as I would like against the Hawks. They desperately need him against the Suns.
Yeah, and let's talk about that Suns team. Again, they come in as the 2 seed out in the Western Conference. They work their way all the way here to the NBA Finals. And at least for my money, I think the biggest thing that separates them right now, we're talking about Giannis may or may not be on the court. We don't really know what his situation will be. That's amazing. We've got some gorgeous Nat sound here on the podcast. I don't know if you got that or not. That was like perfect with the birds chirping. Anyway, coming back here, I just had to point that out. That was amazing. So the Phoenix Suns, they've got two superstars that are healthy, that are raring to go here, Devin Booker and CP3. Chris Paul, I mean, we kind of wondered whether he would be at 100%. He quickly answered that question during that second round series. And I mean, again, I feel like this team is a well-oiled machine. DeAndre Ayton can be considered one of those guys as well. I just think there are more dudes on this Phoenix Suns team than there are for Milwaukee. And again, you're talking about a Giannis that may or may not be on the floor. Right now, let's just go ahead and pop a marker down here in the podcast. It is 52-49 Suns. This is a close game one. So again, there's no cheating for either of us right now. But Ethan, what was your, before this game started, what was your pick for this series heading into game one?
Suns in five.
Okay, I had Suns in five as well. I was also kind of expecting that Giannis was not going to be on the floor here for game one. He's got 13 points, or 8 points correction at this point in the game. But yeah, I don't know. I think that the whole concept of, you know, Giannis can lead you to big wins, which obviously he can, depending on the situation. But I think the way that the Bucks struggled against the Hawks, I think that was really kind of the one alarm bell that got set off in my mind, where I went, okay, I don't trust this team to do anything in the finals. And I still don't.
No, they were fortunate. They got an injured Brooklyn, were able to get through there. And even that was touch and go. Kevin Durant almost beat them by himself, practically. And, well, I guess one and kind of and had one leg, I guess. But they've gotten very lucky. They ended up pulling the Hawks because the Sixers did Sixers things. What a miserable thing that was. But I think the Suns series where we get close games, but the series itself is not close. I just don't see a way the Bucks can compete against the Suns. You hit on a great point about Phoenix. Earlier you said they've got a ton of dudes. Yeah, they have a bunch of different dudes who can lead you in scoring. Okay, Booker's not shooting it well tonight. Well, CP3 might get it done. Or you've got their terrific wing play with Mikal Bridges, who went nuts in one of the Western Conference Finals games. I just like their multiple scoring attack. And we talked about this with the Bucks in our last podcast, and it holds true again against the Suns. The Suns bench blows the Bucks bench out of the water.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of depth, that is not even a question here for Phoenix. And I think that also the question a lot of people had was, well, you know, does DeAndre Ayton going to worry about getting into foul trouble? Like, there's not really another big that can come in and play here for Phoenix. That has not been an issue. That has continued to not be an issue. And that has at this point become a non-factor, not even really a talking point here. So I think you and I are both firmly in the belief that this is going to be Phoenix's series. Again, we'll know a little bit more after this podcast is posted tomorrow morning, which will be Wednesday morning. Game one will be in the books. But really quickly, Ethan, any final thoughts here on the Suns and Bucks here in the NBA Finals before we close it out tonight?
Yeah, we've kind of spent this podcast lamenting the Bucks, which compared to Phoenix, that's acceptable. That's fine. Phoenix is the better team. But I do want to give some credit where credit is due to the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a team that the last time they were in the finals, there was a guy named Luol Cindor on their team. You know him as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It is phenomenal that they finally made it to the finals after, you know, all these years of, oh, Bucks, they're the best team in the East. Easy run to the finals. And it just, the choking in the playoffs. Well, they finally made it here. And that is a breath of fresh air for the city of Milwaukee. Good on the Bucks. It really has been impressive from them. And they pulled Brooklyn, which was tough. And I know they got help from injuries. I still think it's a very impressive season for the Bucks. They are not getting nearly enough credit for. And that's because they're getting outshone by the Phoenix Suns, which are one of the most remarkable turnarounds in NBA history, I think, for this team. I mean, you know, you were down in Phoenix watching them get blown out on the few Suns games we'd go to. I mean, I watched the Rockets drop 90 against this team in a half. And just the transformation, that the building they have done. And then they found that keystone in Chris Paul to bring it all together. Just unbelievable team building from the Suns. Truly impressive. And in favor of parity, this is a great finals. I don't care that these two teams aren't from Los Angeles or New York City. It doesn't matter. This is really a terrific matchup in these finals.
Yeah, the last things that I have to say here, you mentioned the game where the Rockets came out and hung 90 on the Suns in a half. Not in a game, in a half. That was my first NBA game that I went to in person, and I have it pulled up in front of me. The Suns that game played TJ Warren, Marquise Chris, Greg Monroe, Devin Booker, Tyler Ulis. That was the starting five. It was followed by the stout bench play of Dragan Bender, Alex Len, I believe Mike James, Jackson, Troy Daniels, and Jared Dudley. That was the team that the Phoenix Suns put on the floor to, I guess, play basketball. It certainly didn't look like it. But the other last point that I wanted to make, Ethan, you know I'm a big fan of my weird stats, my, you know, fun storylines that kind of come out of this. And I believe this involves a former Denver Nugget. Correct me if I'm wrong, but either way this series goes, Torrey Craig is going to get a ring this year. He did play for the Nuggets, right?
Don't talk to me about Torrey Craig.
Oh? You're
going to make me sad.
Aw.
The Nuggets, before this season, released Torrey Craig, which was unbelievably stupid at the time. It looks even worse now. Torrey Craig is a terrific role player. He can shoot the three. He is a tremendous defender that the Nuggets could have used in the playoffs this year. Not that they were going to beat the Suns anyway, but good for Torrey Craig. I am so happy for him. I miss him dearly. I know Torrey wants that ring to have a Sun on it, but yeah, good for Torrey Craig. I'm very proud of him.
All right. Well, we have had a brief development, and we've actually reached a fantastic stopping point. We have hit halftime in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, and heading into the locker room, the Phoenix Suns lead it 57-49. Ethan, thank you so much for coming on the show today, talking a little F1, a little NBA basketball, and hopefully now that we're both into our seasons, we might be able to have these types of visits and a few more podcasts here throughout the rest of the summer.
Oh, yeah, I hope so. Always fun.
Absolutely. That'll do it for us. For Tyler Henry, for Ethan Jordan, I want to say thank you once again for tuning in. Hopefully the TBH Sports Podcast will return again very soon. Again, given the way the summer baseball works, no promises, but we'll try to get another podcast out. But once again, thank you for tuning in wherever you do tune in to the TBH Sports Podcast.